So did you hear that Elon is releasing the cheap Teslas, not the expensive Teslas, the cheap Teslas? And I wanted to know, how soon are you going to purchase your cheap Tesla?
I shan't be purchasing one. I will not be purchasing one.
No. Let's cheap just be, Tesla?
No, oh, nor cheap. nor am I buying the sort of fat DeLorean that he sells too.
the Cybertruck, you're calling it right. A fat DeLorean. I have not heard that, but that's brilliant. But here's my question is, how low would Elon have to go for you to consider buying the cheap Tesla?
He could give me one. I'll put it that way.
Just remember, everybody, your story to tell. Tell it well. I'm just old marketing.
And now, for your listening pleasure, here's Polizzi and Rose, covering the week of media, marketing, and digital content news. This Old Marketing. Take it away, boys.
Well, hello, my friends. Welcome to This Old Marketing, proudly brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. And I'm Robert Rose, and welcome to episode number 425 for April 26th, 2024. And with me, as always, as he always is my friend, my pal, my colleague, and a guy who didn't get dissed on Taylor Swift's new album, Mr. Joe Polizzi.
Ooh, I read into that. That is juicy. Like, I didn't realize.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when
Taylor holds a grudge. There's no doubt that Taylor holds a grudge.
I remember when the whole Kanye West thing happened to Taylor. Was that the VMAs?
That's the VMAs, and then the subsequent thing where he basically called her a biatch. So
You do not want to get on her bad side.
No, you
I
do
have
not.
To say. So for those people that don't know,
for the four of you who don't know.
Well, but there's a song out on her newly released album, which is just going, of course, gangbusters.
Yeah.
That seems to call out Kanye's wife at the time. Are they still married?
They are not still married. No,
they're not still married. You know, because you lived next to the Kardashians.
I do.
So I live.
That's right. We had a meeting. We had a neighborhood meeting. We set up a lemonade stand in Kim's GoFundMe. Yes. So for her psychological help. But yes.
But the whole snake thing. So it's really it is a real soap opera.
Yeah.
And she comes back out and
it's marketing too, by the way. It's
brilliant. You know, it's brilliant. Although it tells you she has more PR power than anyone in the world right now.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
She can make or break you. She can, if she wants 5 million people to go vote, she can do that. I've never seen such behavior change ability from one person through their content.
It's amazing actually to see and to see how that influence, for lack of a better word, is harnessed in both positive and negative ways, right? I mean, because I was fascinated to watch people who didn't love the album. Like, you know, they weren't gushing over it. They were like, meh, it's good, it's fine. Yeah. And the hate that they would get on social media for just literally saying it wasn't the best thing since sliced bread was quite remarkable.
Yeah, whoever says anything against Taylor, you got to watch out.
Oh, like, you really do.
It's not. I don't know.
By the way, we recognize that our fearless leader is Taylor Swift, and so we welcome the alien overlord that is Taylor Swift. Yes.
If for your marketing specific crowd, if you'd like to pass This Old Marketing on, we would totally accept.
Exactly.
We'd like to break our servers.
That's right.
I so admire what she's doing. I probably have been in the dark for a long time on some issues that I shouldn't have been, but the Taylor Swift thing, the Caitlin Clark thing, the amazing female sports that I'm starting to follow. I'm just, it's just incredible. I feel like I'm a new person now.
Oh, wow.
Don't you feel like that?
I think I feel like that every day. I feel like that every day. Every day that I wake up and I know that on Thursdays I get to meet with you, it makes me feel like a new man.
Have you been following Nelly Korda?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, my God. So
okay,
Nelly Korda,
now you know something that I don't.
Nelly Korda has won five tournament LPGA tournaments that she's golfed in. She just won a major Chevron Championship.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you don't follow golf that much.
I don't.
Scotty Scheffler on the men's tour is having they call it a Tiger-esque type season. He is dominating. We haven't seen somebody dominate the tour like Scotty Scheffler has since Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Now you have Nelly Korda on the women's side is just doing the same kind of thing. She's starting to get some coverage, which I love to see. I don't know. I love this. I mean, you have to start following golf, by the way. It's very exciting.
I really don't. I don't. My father-in-law follows golf very much like we follow football. I mean, he knows everything. Like, he's got stats at his fingertips. He knows everything about golf. So I'm sure he's well aware. And when we go visit my father-in-law for holidays or whatever, that's what's on. That is the only thing that is on is the golf.
Well, I don't know if he has a take on the split tour, but that's a big soap opera.
I'm sure he does. I have not asked
him
about
the Saudi back tour, and you have the PGA tour, and so you have the stars have split, and you've got the history behind the PGA tour, and you've got this new money rolling in the LIV tour.
Well, I mean, we talked about this on the show, right? Yeah. The LIV tour and how the Saudis were now funding this, and they're going to buy more. They're certainly going to purchase other elements of other franchises for sure.
They're trying to buy an NFL football team. They're trying to do all the things, a Major League Baseball team. It's all. It will be interesting to see what happens.
Speaking of which, we have the NFL draft. We have the NFL draft.
Are you watching tonight as we record this? The first round is tonight.
I don't think I'm going to watch. I don't think I'm going to watch. I might watch a little bit.
I'm not going to watch.
I'm not going to watch.
Because Dallas doesn't have a pick till the 20th pick, and I don't want to watch it. You know what they should? This is what they should. It's probably too late for you because it's like 8 o'clock Pacific time.
That's true.
Will happen. Now, you're not going to like this, but he won't be available. But I think that the perfect pick for Dallas in the first round is J.J. McCarthy, the quarterback from Michigan.
He won't be available.
He'll probably go to the Minnesota Vikings at 11. But
yeah,
just,
of course.
For those of you that don't know, J.J. McCarthy, one of the winningest quarterbacks of all time. He only lost one time as a starter, national championship Michigan team, which I hate. I hate the Michigan Wolverines as a team, but I respect what they accomplished. Not a big Jim Harbaugh fan, but I love this kid. And I love his winning attitude. And he's one of those people that he might not have the perfect height, their weight, their speed or whatever, but the guy can read defenses like nobody's business, and he just wins.
Yeah.
He just goes out there and wins. And that's what I think Dallas needs. They need that winning. not that I'm a Dak hater, because I'm not, but you and I both know that Dallas is not going to make it to win the Super Bowl with Dak Prescott.
That's probably true. That's probably true. At this point, I have resigned myself to say that that's probably true.
And which is sad, because I think Dak's a good guy. And he's very talented. It
begs the question of whether any quarterback can win in Dallas because of the culture there. But that's a whole other podcast.
Is that a Jerry Jones culture?
It's just a culture of the business. It's a culture of the business. And I have a whole theory on it. And I would be glad to regale people for.
I'm sure our listeners would love to hear your theory.
I'm sure they would love it.
The 5% of you that enjoy what we talk about.
My doctoral thesis on why the Dallas Cowboys can't win a Super Bowl. Yeah,
one of the reasons why the Cleveland Browns can't win a Super Bowl is yet again this year we have no first round pick.
Yeah.
And I don't think we have one next year either.
Yeah.
Because we give them away like Kevin Costner did in Draft Day. And we
don't pick twice about it. There it is.
First round pick for you. None for us.
Everybody, you could just hold up a picture of Deshaun Watson and kiss it and say, there's my first round pick.
I still don't understand what the deal is. But I continue to be a Cleveland Browns season ticket holder. I love the team and the fans. And that's all I have to say.
That's all I have to say about that.
That's all I have to say about that.
All right. We have a big show. And a big, big show to talk about because the news has been breaking since we last recorded. Quite literally in the last week, and this is the big story for this week that we'll cover, that the TikTok bill has not only passed the House, it's passed the Senate, and it has been signed by Joe Biden. And it is now the law of the land. This all happened in the last week. I mean,
it happened right after we went off air on the last show when you said that it was not going to happen.
We'll talk about whether I need to eat crow or not.
We need to figure out is the things that need to happen in the United States government. And then you need to come out on this broadcast and say it's not going to happen.
That's right. And then it happens.
As you say it's not going to happen.
That's right. It's pretty much guaranteed to happen. That's right. So we'll talk a little bit about that and the fallout for content creators and marketers alike. Then we'll get to the best of the rest when we talk a little bit about Taylor Swift and her deal with Universal Music Group and what that means for music on TikTok for the next 9 months in any event. And we'll talk a little bit about AI and how Instagram and Facebook, basically Meta, who had a weird quarterly result yesterday, which we can talk a little bit about too. But they basically introduced, I want to pronounce it Yama, but I'm sure it's Llama.
You pronounce it Yama?
Because it's Spanish, Yamo. Yamo. Yama.
What is it? Isn't that James Ingram? Yamo be there? Or is that Stephen? Who was that? Was that Yamo be there? So we'll let from here on out. That Meta's AI product is Yamo be there.
Yeah.
Up and okay.
Okay. All right. Then we'll get to hits and misses where we talk about a marketing hit or miss. I'm going to talk about what a really bad week it was for Google from a messaging and marketing perspective, but maybe not from actual business perspective. Joe is going to talk a little bit about, follow up really on all things John Deere and some of those
specifically with about. Cedar Fair Parks.
Yeah.
But following on to the story we covered last week.
That's right. Important. And then we'll get to Rants and Raves, where I will talk a little more around Elon and how he killed his marketing team and what a good idea I think that is. And then Joe is going to talk and rant or rave, I should say, about a Jay Klaus tweet. And tie it. I'm sure somehow it will tie into CEX and the amazing event that's coming.
Not up. Like you think I'm like pitching all the time. I'm not. It's because CEX is coming up May 5th through 7th in Cleveland doesn't mean that I'm pitching that everyone should.
Well done.
It's going to be an amazing time, we're all going to be there. And
well played, sir.
Do you want to let you know before we get to the big story?
Okay.
This Meta. Meta comes out with amazing financial results and their stock drops almost 20%.
That's right.
Do you have a theory on why?
I don't know why. It's the weirdest thing because they came out and just crushed their performance. So revenue, profit, everything. And then what everybody is saying, what all the analysts are saying, it was because they said, revenue might be a little lighter than, basically growth might be not, I don't remember what exact numbers were, but it's like instead of 16%, it might be 13% growth, which is still like, that's amazing. But it was crazy. I mean, it was basically, we crushed it, but don't expect us to crush it again next quarter. And basically they punished the stock.
So here's my take. First of all, look at the last two or three financial reports from Meta, and you will see historically some of the best results you will ever see a company have.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And they're doing this while they're laying people off. So efficiency wise, I've never seen anything like it. We've talked about this on the show. The reason why I think the stock dipped so much is because Mark Zuckerberg made a few comments about the fact that there's going to be some significant investment that goes into their AI ideas. And Yam will be there and the whole thing. That's where they started to spook some investors because of what happened with their investments on the metaverse side. Now, when you have Mark Zuckerberg come out and he says, I'm going to invest money in something, he does it. And the metaverse investments, billions and billions of dollars, didn't go so well. If you remember at that time, that's when Meta as a stock struggled. And as soon as he did the 180 and said, okay, we're going to put the metaverse stuff to the side and we're just going to focus on financial efficiency, the stock just goes from whatever it was, $100 to $500 in 18 months.
Yeah.
So I think that's the story that they're concerned that you're not going to see the margins that you've been seeing because Meta's going to invest, and rightfully so, some of this cash into some long-term AI investments that will probably bear a lot of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I think that's where it's coming from.
Yeah, that's I think that's a good theory. I think that's actually a good theory. And we'll see. I mean, look, this is not an investment show. We are not investors.
Oh, geez, no.
We're not, you know, we're not, jeez, not making any recommendations
please,
here.
If anybody ever thought this is an investment show, please, for the love of God.
Yeah, that's right. But it might be a good buying opportunity right now for Meta. I mean,
Meta has done very, very well. But the other thing too is that Meta and Netflix, which saw a down week, they're priced for perfection. Nvidia, they all went so crazy bonkers up for the last 6 to 9 months. You can't ride that forever. Is there one little excuse that you can make for somebody to say, oh, it's dipped 1%, 2%. You're going to see people drop.
Yeah, that's true.
And it needed a little bit of a correction anyway.
That's true.
Again, not an investment show.
Not an investment show. All right. Let's talk about our big story here, which is just dominating the news of social media and marketing, which is, of course, that Joe Biden has now signed the bill.
What's with the Joe Biden?
Joe Biden. That's how I refer to our illustrious president, Joe Biden. Biden has signed the bill that would ban TikTok if ByteDance fails to sell the app, says TechCrunch and so many other mainstream media outlets that are reporting on this. The article opens up by saying President Biden has signed a bill that would ban TikTok if its Chinese parent company ByteDance fails to sell it within a year. The bill, which includes, by the way, aid for Ukraine and Israel, was passed by the U.S. Senate in a 79-18 vote late Tuesday after the House passed it with an overwhelming majority over the weekend. The bill gives ByteDance 9 months. This was opposed to 6 months in the other bill. Bill gives ByteDance 9 months to divest TikTok with a 90-day extension available to complete a deal. If ByteDance doesn't sell TikTok, it would become illegal for app stores to distribute the app in the U.S. And I went and read the bill, just so we all know.
Oh, thank God.
And it basically says the exact same thing as the one that was passed in the House earlier that we talked about at some great length and was sent over to the Senate, which was going to slow walk it. I'm going to take a 40%, 50% mulligan here. Basically.
Because you said that who
knew that Mike Johnson would actually grow a spine and actually put this in? And it was very clever, him putting it in. There's no doubt about that, making sure that it got packaged up in the aid package as sort of an omnibus bill, which included money for Ukraine, money for Israel, and money for something else. I'm forgetting. And then,
some
of course,
the TikTok, stuff in there, maybe. I don't know.
No, there was it was another foreign aid thing. Anyway, and then also obviously this. So, and this happened lightning fast. I mean, quite literally, we went off the air on Thursday. Our show aired on Friday. This got sent over to the Senate over the weekend. They passed it over the weekend, and Joe Biden signed it
Wednesday. Yeah.
Yeah. Signed it Wednesday.
Really nuts.
It's so fast. But that was because of the funding. not because of the, that was just, it was sort of a no brainer on the TikTok thing. Like that wasn't going to hold anything up. They clearly just don't care that much, but it was all about the funding. And so the, you know, the people in the House, who insisted that it go in, basically pulled a fast one. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I just mean that they got it through very, very quickly, without having to wait for the Senate to act on it because they just sort of attached it to this thing. So it's a fascinating thing. We should spend more time not talking about the mechanics of our government, which is stupid, but rather the actual bill itself.
Well, we'll talk about the bill, but you got to give Mike Johnson some
credit.
You do.
I mean, as much
I'm
as
not
he's
a big fan of his politics.
Tool. Yeah, right.
But I'll tell you what, he has. I mean, they've really started to pass some things lately, yeah. Which is
he a grew a spine. Yeah.
It's really something else. So why don't you, I have many, many takes on this. And of course, as you know, I've been calling for this for the past 2+ years.
Of course, yeah.
On this, you can go back to many shows back in the day that I said this will happen. It's finally happened. Very similar to, you know, at some point, Apple will buy Disney. But we'll talk about that in another. I just want to chalk this up on the board a little bit. Take a little happy dance.
You can have your happy dance.
Thank you for allowing me to have my happy
dance. Let me say for the record, I'm saying it for the record. You called it, you predicted it, and it came true. I mean, you have called for this for the last 2 years, I think. I mean, basically since Trump brought it up, right?
It's been a while. Yeah, so that was 2020 when it first started, so a little bit of time. Here's my question for you.
Yeah.
Now, what happens? We know that there's 270 days that they have to sell,
plus another 90, plus another 90 that they can take if they need it. Yeah.
So 1 year. The issue that I have that I want to get your take on is, I believe they will divest as well. I believe that that's important, but there's only a small handful of companies that can afford TikTok. It is in my opinion, the most important media company on the planet right now.
Well, a lot of that is going to be in the details. You know, I mean, I started thinking about this over the weekend. I started thinking about, like, what does divestiture really mean? In other words, does the algorithm have to come with it in order for divestiture? And is the algorithm all that? I mean, nobody knows whether the algorithm is some secret thing that's amazing that, you know, does something that is truly feeding the engagement here, or whether it's just a buzzworthy thing, right? So if the Chinese government doesn't allow the algorithm to come over and says, basically, that's not part of the divestiture. So sure, you have the company. Have everything you want and basically sell it off without the algorithm. One, does the buyer go, I don't need the algorithm to make this work. Two, does it have to be branded a different company, right? Does it have to now be Schmickschmock? And what does that mean?
Oh, that would be exciting.
Yes. Yeah. And so, or does it become part of something else? In other words, does it become, you know, some other company buys it to, you know, like a Meta or a Microsoft buys it and it just becomes a feature within one of the other platforms. I mean, there's so many ways that you could slice and dice this that I think all of that is going to be really dependent on who buys it and what they do with it. The thing that I can't get my head wrapped around is if it divests into another company that Americans can subscribe to, is it a separate platform from, I mean, because right now it already is a separate platform from the Chinese version, right? The Chinese version of TikTok has a different name. It's got a different, you know, it's a whole thing, right? And so does it yet become is there a third? In other words, do they just rename and divest TikTok, the whole platform, or do they peel off TikTok and leave TikTok as it is for Canada and Mexico and, you know, all the other countries that sort of have, you know, subscribers and users on it, and then create a new thing with no users on it and say, basically, if you're American, you got to go sign up and start over again, right?
No, I think you're looking at it way too in-depthly. No, TikTok does not, the name doesn't change. And this is the thing for content creators and people on the platform. Nothing will change. Nobody, if you've never been paying attention to the news, good for you, because your life will continue to go on before, during, and after the divestiture. It's going to be TikTok, and it's going to either go into one of the big four or five, or a combination of the big four or five. When I say that, that's Apple, Meta, Microsoft, Google. One of those companies, maybe Netflix, I don't think so, Amazon possibly, a group of them, or they're going to set it up where there is a clear barrier, which is much harder to do. Because in some cases, and you've made this point many times on this, yeah, you could look at this and say it is not a Chinese-owned company. Because if you look at the investors in it, you're like, oh, well, these are investors, global investors, many American investors. So you'd say, oh, no, it is not a Chinese company. But what seems to be clear, because if you look at the research that's being done, there are certain key content elements that are sensitive Chinese issues that don't get anything into American TikTok. You don't see any controversial Chinese things that come through an American TikTok. Oh, that's curious. You do on Instagram.
Right.
But you don't on TikTok. So that's where the issue is. There's real informational control there. So whether or not you can say, oh, well, there's this clear delineation between American-owned servers and whatever. Yeah, I don't think you can split up the brand or the algorithm or anything like that. It's going to be, okay, so then, we're going to sell this company off. It's going to be sold.
So everybody's
going to go on with their life.
Right. So then what we're really talking about here is smoke and mirrors. Because at that point, all we're talking about, because the algorithm remains the same, which is, you know, I mean, that's been your concern, right? That the algorithm influences in a way that there could be, you know, influence on the algorithm that provides a bit of, you know, propaganda, if you will, to the American public. So if that doesn't change, then, you know, and your user account and all the content stays exactly the same, and basically the infrastructure, and basically all we're doing is changing legal corporate structure, right? If that's all we're doing, then is anything going to change? I mean,
well, with one exception, with the exception of you're not going to get the damper on the Chinese. Here, let me show you this one, because I brought this up. It's really, we can talk to it for the listeners, people can see it. So if we go and look at this. So here's the study. Here's a chart that the New York Times put out
on
the topics that you sensitive topics you don't see on TikTok currently. So you got Hong Kong protests, Tiananmen Square, South China Sea, Taiwan. For it basically says, for example, for Taiwan, very sensitive issue for China right now. For every 100 Instagram posts with Taiwan related hashtags, there were only about 7 on TikTok. That is not that's just happens. This is somebody playing with that algorithm. That's what I believe will ultimately change, where the algorithm for getting people addicted.
Don't think it will.
How can it not? Obviously, somebody's playing with the strings in the background here and making this happen. And so if you said, if it's an American owned company, you're not going to see that American owned company. You're going to see what happens on Instagram and Snap and some of these other companies. You're not going to see, oh, yeah, we can't talk about pro-Israel.
Sure.
We can't talk about pro-Ukraine. So the algorithm, when you say algorithm, the addiction of it, the way that people find, the way that it knows exactly what you like, that will remain. But you will not get this shelter.
So the content net widens is what you're suggesting. The content net widens to things that
it's
not restricted, right? Or it is restricted and it just gets new restrictions.
It's a new buy.
Depending on who the American owner is, right?
That's exactly right. It's a new American. Let's not be, we're not ignorant here. We know there's an American bias as well. You will start to see it from the American lens. Yeah. I think
so we're going to see a lot more guns
probably.
Yeah.
Yes. I think the issue is there. My concern, at least from a monopolistic standpoint, is you only have a small number of companies. Like, it's going to go for 50, 75 billion, 100 billion. I mean, this is more valuable.
I don't think it's going to go that high. I don't, because of the leverage here, I don't think they're going to get that kind of multiple. They have to sell.
Yes, they're not going to get favorable terms because of the time. Yeah. But are you kidding me that you don't?
And by the way, this is not going to happen for some time. There's no rush on this, right?
Oh,
this
because
is...
you're going to have lawsuits. Absolutely, this will go. I'm assuming this is going to go to the Supreme Court.
Probably.
So it's going to be way over the time.
Yeah.
The clock is not ticking right now, in my opinion, because the lawsuits are being submitted as we speak. But are you kidding me? You have Apple, Microsoft, Alphabet, Amazon. They all want this. This is better than any other media company out there. There's 145 million unique visitors in America alone every day. Go to this. I mean,
I think buyers are going to be more circumspect about this. I really do. I think they're going to be. I mean, look, I know there are going to be hungry investor groups put together. I mean, mm-hmm. what is his name? The former Treasury Secretary has already said he's going to put together an investment group to try and.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't have the money.
The amount of money here that's going to be corporate.
It's going to have to be corporate funded. I would love to see. I don't think this could ever happen, but I think the right move is a corporate consortium where almost like how Hulu was done back in the day, where you had four or five companies come together to own Hulu. You could do the same thing with TikTok. I'd love to see the big four, big five come in and all take a piece of this and decide, okay, here's who the CEO is going to be. We will all reap the rewards of this thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It'll be really interesting to see because I have my gut. I mean, and look, I hear everything you're saying and I think it's spot on, but my gut still tells me that the big companies, especially a company like Apple, it doesn't want, I mean, this is just a hairy, hairy company. And it's just, I can't see them going, it's just not worth the scrutiny. The public scrutiny, the PR scrutiny, the governmental scrutiny, like just nobody wants, it's just kind of an icky thing to pick up, right? I mean, it's just, I know it's popular mm-hmm. but as soon as somebody starts talking about, I mean, here's the thing. When some group or some company starts talking about, the rumors start flying, Google or Amazon or Microsoft or somebody who can really, Oracle maybe, who could pick this up. The immediate reaction is going to be exactly what you were just talking about. Well, what are you going to do about the content? Are you going to allow the Chinese stuff to come in? Or are you going to, all of these questions are going to start getting asked and all these companies are going to have to come out with a stance on this. And I just don't think any of them want to. I just don't think any of them.
You don't think Meta would do it in a heartbeat?
Maybe.
You don't think Microsoft would do it in a heartbeat? Alphabet absolutely.
Microsoft,
would.
No.
Because it's easy for them. Alphabet says we're going to use the same terms that we use for Google search. The Meta says we're going to use the same terms that we use for Instagram. We're not going to block anything unless it really hurts people. And they've the U.S. Citizenship has already bought into that.
Yeah, you might be right.
Good. They're
you
might treat be right. It like my Instagram. I mean, this other article, which I'll put in the show notes, you've got content creators on TikTok that are saying, "Oh my God, my livelihood!" And I'm like, "There's more of those people will be happy. They just want to keep it."
Oh yeah, those people don't need to worry. It's going to divest. I mean, there's just no doubt about it that it's going to survive. It's just. And all of the things are basically saying, I'm not going to vote for anybody who voted for it. It's like, well, too late for that. Right. Yeah. I mean, there's only 18 of them.
I'll tell you what, we'll end it. We went too long on this, but if I never saw TikTok again, I would not be disappointed.
Okay. That's where we part ways, my friend, because I love
TikTok. I know
TikTok.
You love it.
I love
you
me some
TikTok. You love it the most.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You love it.
All right. Well, speaking of loving it the most, we should probably pay a couple of bills here.
So much like the age-old question to skinny jean or not to skinny jean, marketing strategies can come and go and come back again. Who can keep up? Luckily, there's HubSpot's 2024 State of Marketing Report, the skinny, if you will, an all-in-one guide for what's happening this year and how marketers can best approach it all. The report covers everything from increasing awareness and engagement to ensuring privacy, boosting efficiency, and, of course, growth. Don't get caught behind the trends. Visit HubSpot.com/stateofmarketing to get your free copy of the report.
You looking to hustle into a new podcast? Well, I recommend Hustle and Flowchart. The Hustle and Flowchart podcast is all about how to build a business so it gives you the freedom and fuel for your life. Join host Joe Fier as he discusses systems, mindset tweaks, reframes, and strategies for entrepreneurs, and really anyone, to enjoy the process of being in business and having fun. This isn't for the entrepreneur looking to build a billion-dollar business. Rather, someone who is looking to build systems to help you make more money than you need just by working part-time. Get the Hustle and Flowchart podcast wherever you follow your favorite pods. You want some big news? Well, the amazing team at Divi HQ have joined forces with Litho. Now, why is that important? Well, Divi has been building amazing collaboration and calendaring software for marketing teams for 13 years. And Litho, well, they've been doing the same with tools for creative and design teams. Now, just like chocolate and peanut butter, they've come together to help all marketers and content producers plan, create, and perform better together. I'm excited to share that This Old Marketing listeners get a 20% discount for life on any Divi HQ or Litho product. And that's not all. Check this out. The first 10 companies that sign up with this campaign will get a free, that's right, free one-hour content workshop with me. Yeah, that's how much we're into this. So don't wait. Visit lythoforlife.com. That's L-Y-T-H-O, lythoforlife.com to learn more.
I'm still fired up about that TikTok. You got me fired up.
Yeah, good.
I'm like, my forehead's all red.
People, really?
You can see. Oh, yeah. Can't you see it? Look how red it is. I'm sweating a little bit.
All right. A sweaty brow.
It's a little.
A little schwitz.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yes.
All right. Do we have a show left?
We do have a show, and it's not all about TikTok, although this story is about TikTok, which is... we're going to talk about Taylor Swift, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, and a really interesting kind of a beef that she's got with UMG at the moment, based on the deal she signed, I think it was back in 2018, which was a fantastic deal with UMG. But basically, it meant that she could go and do a lot of things that normal artists can't do. Anyway, the article here that we'll link to comes from, again, TechCrunch, and it's her music, despite the fight that UMG is having with TikTok and pulled all their music off of TikTok, Taylor Swift's music is now back on TikTok. And to says Taylor Swift's music and music from all artists signed to Universal Music Group was pulled from TikTok when the two parties were unable to come to a renewed licensing agreement. Universal Music at that point published a scathing press release accusing TikTok of trying to bully the label into accepting a deal worth less than the previous one. But then they said they tried to intimidate us. But then Swift, with her new album, of course, is basically with her direct deal. She's allowed to negotiate deals on her own. And she basically went to TikTok and said, you can have my music for a fee and all those kinds of things. And UMG has come out and said, no, Taylor, don't.
Don't do it.
You know, cue song from Taylor dissing UMG in 5, 4, 3, 2. Yeah. So it's Taylor Swift turning into a little bit of a Prince here situation. So the artist formerly known as Taylor Swift making direct deals. What do you think?
Well, I mean, if I was Taylor Swift, you'd be doing the same thing. She's
now bigger than the deals outside. She's bigger than the record label.
She's bigger than the record label. And if you're Billie Eilish or BTS or Ariana Grande is also on there, you've got to be thinking, can I do my direct deals with? I mean, the thing is they don't own their music. Like Taylor now is owning her catalog where she re-recorded everything. So she owns it. She owns her new stuff. I mean, we as normal content creators, we think about our e-newsletters and the control that we have, distribution for audience, whatever. We need to look at what she's doing right now and say, how can we get as many assets as we can under our control so that we can sell them, license them, provide advertising to them, those books, whatever the case is. I'm inspired by what she's doing. At the same time, boy, I would not want to be in PR for UMG, and I would not want to be one of those other artists that are like, well, what do I do now?
Well, or artist relations. I mean, can you imagine their phones are ringing off the wall right now? Like, hey, how do I get in on that deal? Right.
Exactly. It would be, I mean, they're really trying to follow her. Any big artist right now needs to be following Taylor Swift's playbook on how they can control their business model. And you don't relegate it to all the other middle businesses involved. So.
You know, all of this came from, I don't know if you know the story behind this, but it all came from Taylor deciding to, this may be urban legend, but I don't, and okay. I don't know that this is 100% true. I haven't done the research, but as I understand it, Taylor's decision to basically all of her publishing rights were held by Scooter Braun. And she, who was the original manager and had the original record company and did all of that. And she went and re-recorded all of her albums that had been released under there and then released them sort of with her own control, right? And so all those albums are now basically what's getting played and what, you know, all the old stuff. It's just the new stuff getting played. And she's been very successful with that. And all of that emerged, I believe, and again, this is the part that might be urban legend, was from a Kelly Clarkson tweet. Kelly Clarkson tweeted at her and said, "Hey, you know what you should do?" Because she was, I guess Taylor was complaining about, you know, the publishing rights being gone and her catalog getting sold and all of that. And Kelly Clarkson suggested, "Why don't you just go record all your old albums and just re-release them under your label?" And that's an amazing thing, right? And to your point, so many artists, I have to imagine, are starting to think about this now. You know, the sort of what do we really need the record company for? Like, what's really, you know, because it's basically marketing, right? It's like, and you know, the business you're in, it's like writers and publishers. Do we really need the publisher? Because theoretically, the publisher did all the things that was really hard to do: distribution and marketing. And now that distribution is so digital and really democratized, and you don't have to worry about getting physical product across the country anymore. And, you know, although there's something with vinyl and all of that, but more importantly, the marketing part, which is pretty much just content marketing with live shows, that's kind of the new model. And you go, well, why do I need a record company at all?
The only thing that I can think of that you and I had something similar happen is that there was a company from another country that wanted to purchase the license Killing Marketing and distribute it and translate it. In this one situation, McGraw-Hill, I can say this now because they're not doing business books anymore, wouldn't allow it because they would only allow translation rights with a legit publisher, however they defined a legit publisher in that country. This has happened 5 or 6 times for all my books, but specifically the one I'm thinking about was Killing Marketing.
Yep.
And we were like, hey, this should be translated. And they're like, no, we don't work with that kind of. And I'm like, why do you get to? Now I get it. There were a lot of benefits. Actually, somebody emailed me yesterday about, hey, what's the benefit between going with a traditional publisher versus self-publishing? And I talked about there were a lot of benefits back in the day.
Yeah.
15 years ago. And I'm trying to think there's just not as many because of the things that you just mentioned. And I think that Taylor's changing them. The whole conversation is starting to change in her world. And I think it's changing in ours as well. And we just, as creators and entrepreneurs, we just have to be cognizant of, we don't just have to do it the way. And that's all we're asking, right? The business models are changing. Don't just say, this is the way you publish a podcast, this is the way that you publish a newsletter. Just always question and say, things have changed a little bit. What can I do to take more control over my business model?
And to be fair, because, and this gets to a conversation that you and I have been having offline with various people for years, it seems. It's easier to do that when you're Taylor Swift. Let's just be honest. Like it's easier to do that when you came up. You know, one of the benefits that a record company or a publisher provides is a platform, is a level of a legitimacy, right? So if you're being published by back in the day by a McGraw-Hill, or if you're being published by Wiley, or if you're being published by, whatever, Simon and Schuster, or if your record is coming out under Universal Music Group, you get sort of the benefit of standing on the shoulders of everybody else who's on that platform, right? So as a new artist, as an unknown artist, you're going to get more radio play. You're going to get more, publicity. You're going to get more legitimacy because of that brand, that, legacy brand that's been there forever. So it's way easier to go direct once you have a brand and a level of fame that enables you to do this without the, you know, without the benefit of that platform. Yeah. It's the question is knowing when and where and how long you want to spend, because that's just a function of time, right? That's just how fast do you want to get there. And it's a fascinating calculus that today's content creator have to think about.
But here's the thing with books. And I had this conversation yesterday specifically to publishing. Publishers will do a deal with you. Most publishers will do a deal with you if you have an audience. If you don't have an audience, you'd like to go with a publisher, but they won't take you.
That's right.
So you're like, what do I do? Do you sell? So you have to build your own audience, and then you get the options to do whatever you want. Then you can probably say, I'm going to go with a publisher, but you probably won't because you want the control. So you'll probably go and do your own thing. So it's just interesting. It's chicken or the egg. And
it's happening in acting too. It's happening in music. It's happening everywhere, right? If you have an audience and a following, it's way easier to get signed by a record company. It's way easier to get cast in a television show or streaming show. It's just way easier if you already have an audience, and they're looking for that. When people go on auditions, they look at their social media profiles to see how big their audience is.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. Go Taylor.
Yeah, go Taylor. You know, setting the new trends for sure.
Awesome. Love it.
All right. Basically from there, let's see where we are in time.
I think we're probably at hits and misses.
Let's go to hits and misses. Yeah, let's move to hits and misses, where Joe and I talk about a hit in marketing or a miss in marketing in the previous week. Would you like to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first.
With your hit?
I'll just show this. We talked about John Deere last week hiring their chief tractor officer, and for what it was, but like the PR buzz around it. But I like the concept of it. I mentioned this one. I wanted to talk about it as well. This is Cedar Point, Cedar Fair Amusement Parks. They're really trying to integrate the idea of content creators. This is, of course, this is nothing new about social media influencers and leveraging that, but they're creating processes and a strategy to truly integrate them and offer perks and money and whatever to different content creators. And I'm showing this because I've been talking a lot of B2B events lately, and I'm saying this is your model. Like, it is now time where you can't just say we're going to create all our content internally and all of our and all whatever we do from a marketing standpoint. Part of your content marketing strategy needs to be, who are the B2B creators in my industry right now, and how do you bring them in as your super fans? It's really what we're talking about.
Yep.
You have super fans right now. They want to create content for you. So let them.
Yeah,
give them a set of guidelines. Give them whatever they can and let them. And by the way, if you let them and you do it really well, those will probably be your future marketing professionals that you will hire. Because people don't realize that your future marketing department is going to be made of content creators. That's it. It's going to be a little marketing media company. And we've been talking about this forever. And we see more and more of these examples. So whatever size company you are, B2B, B2C, nonprofit, whatever the case is, you have to start preparing for this now. Take the baby steps to get these super fans as part, give them the assets so they can tell your story. And then that will set the path in place so that you can hire these people in the future.
It's such an important point right now. Funny enough, I'm going to be doing a webinar later today talking about the sort of trends that are going on and sort of applications and pragmatic advice around social media in 2024. And the interesting thing there is, when I went to Digital Summit, one of the only, I would say, valuable things was watching the keynote of Jennifer Heelan, who's the VP of brand at McDonald's. And her presentation was on how McDonald's has kind of become cool again. The brand has become cool again. And what they're doing from a brand marketing perspective is UGC, all these social media people who are creating fan-based content and picking up the culture that is McDonald's and posting about it. And then they see which ones are really resonating and they turn those into marketing campaigns. And it's a fascinating way to sort of source your creativity of looking at your biggest fans and saying, let's elevate them. And let's elevate their creative vision and use that not only in social media, but across television, across print, across in-store sorts of things. And she talked about this one thing where they, you know, where they're, I guess they have a big anime following. There's where anime fans put in McDonald's, and basically they McDonald's just leaned into that, and they created a whole McDonald's packaging and all this stuff to feed the anime fans, and it's that kind of thing. It's just really working.
We went to, because my youngest said, would you go? We were in Tampa,
yeah,
and said, would you go check at this McDonald's and see if they have McDonald's?
I said,
what's McDonald's? I'm like, I have no, I like, I'm totally clueless. Like, oh no, it's been on social media. I want to see whatever. We go
exactly.
And we got a soda, and on the side is the upside down M.
The upside down McDonald's. M. Yeah.
And I'm like, crazy, right?
It's really incredible
stuff they're doing.
Yeah, it's incredible. Awesome. It's incredible. Okay. All right. Mine very quickly, I guess it's a miss or more likely a loser is, you know, the news from Google this week has not been great, right? So there's three articles that I'll point to and we'll put in the show notes. But basically, number one, Google basically fired a bunch of people for having a protest around the Israeli-Gaza issue. And we're, by the way, in my opinion, right to do so, right? That's, you know, they were causing a disruption, and this is, and Google CEO had a big point, but let's just be honest, it's not a great look. Either in any event, this is not what they want to be talking about. They don't want to be talking about, you know, the challenges that they're having in firing people over political issues. The second is, once again, as you've heard me say, ad nauseum, and I know people are tired of it at this point. I'm tired of it at this point, is that Google has yet again, this is another, I guess, another mea culpa, because I keep going, it's here, it's happening, it's going to happen. Google is going to delay the third-party cookie deprecation again to next year. And their reasoning is because they're saying, well, we can't really get the industry to agree on our sandbox thing. And let's just be flat out honest. This is Google not telling the truth. This is not the reason why this is them trying to figure out a way to make it all work within their system and make advertisers happy and make the industry happy. And it's not working. So they're yet again going, well, we have to delay because businesses depend on it. It's like, no, they don't. You're just delaying because you're seeing your revenue on search drop, and third-party cookies are a meaningful part of that. That feeds into a Threads post that we'll link to from Rand Fishkin, which is a fascinating read if you go read it, where he is he's talking about the person who killed search. It's an article and a blog post that he links to that talks through quite a tale of the last 3 years at Google and search results and how they've been trying to game the system in order to keep revenue up. Because they're starting to see revenue drop from click-throughs, from searches, and all of the influences that we've talked about on this show certainly apply here. And so the ads people, the revenue people, the technology teams around search are really running around trying to figure stuff out about how to keep this, you know, how to keep things growing, as it were. And it's a fascinating tale. So all these three things together, including a number of other things, including their quarterly results, sort of point to Google didn't have a great week last week, and is, you know, there's real trouble there a brewing.
You know who'd be perfect to buy TikTok?
Google,
Alphabet.
Yeah,
who's the company of all the ones we talk about that needs the most? That's most threatened by AI. That's most concerned about people not using search and
And I got tons of from our chat last week or 2 weeks ago, where we talked about HubSpot being possibly on the buying circuit for Google. I got lots of responses on that saying nobody wants this. Like, no, the HubSpot users do not want this. So it's fascinating to me.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. Hold off their cash
because they're going to need it for
TikTok. They're going to need something.
So there you go.
They're going to need something. Yeah. All right. Now if we move to our rants and raves section, where Joe and I go off on a little bit of a rant or a little bit of a rave over something that makes us feel like we've been dissed by Taylor Swift, or something that makes us feel like she sung a love song about us, which I'm sure she's going to.
It's going to be a nasty one. I would be okay
with it. That would be fun.
Because it would help us.
Taylor, I know she listens. Taylor,
it's like,
please, a song about this old marketing.
Oh, because instead of like the one snake, this is two snakes. We'd be two snakes.
You have to
read about the whole snake thing if you don't know.
I know what the
thing. I know you do, but
I do
because you know because you know the Kardashians, so you know about the whole
thing. I know of it. People I don't know.
Listening to this, don't know.
Yeah,
okay.
They don't.
Do you want to go first?
If you know, you know.
Do you want to go first with your?
Yeah, I'll go first. I'll go first.
Go. I want to hear about your thoughts on
Disney. Well, okay. So if you did, so we almost covered it on the show. Although I was saving it a bit for my rant, which is Tesla had a crummy week as well, and they've had a crummy year really with everything. I'm sure there's something that he may be paying attention to that he should be paying attention to that he's not, based on his focus on a small little social media network company. And so the numerous reports have come out that the fat DeLorean, the Cybertruck, bugs. They've got a complete recall on it.
Like 4,000 out there? There's not like
4,000. They've only sold 3,800, I believe, 3,800. Is the number.
Okay.
Yeah, 3,800 is the total number that they've sold, which is tiny when you compare it to the number of trucks that are normally sold in the U.S. in a given quarter or couple of quarters, I guess, now. And so there's big layoffs going on. 10% by some estimates of what Tesla has said they're going to do is lay off 10%. But what made the news, especially all the marketing journals this week, was that it's almost a year to the day that Elon fired he's now fired the PR and comms team that were working on the one and only advertising program that they were starting to get a little bit of traction on. So they were, it's basically the headlines are all he fired marketing. He fired the marketing team. But it's really, if you look at it, if you sort of uncover it, it was a content team. And most, in our parlance would be really a PR and comms team, because they were creating content that was really built for social media and it was branded content and it was trying to make the news. That's really where they were. They got advertising added to their plate as late as last year. So the team has actually been around for some time. The team has actually been around since, I went and looked at the head of the team there, who had a lovely post to his colleagues and basically everybody saying, thanks for the fish, basically. But what is bothersome to me, so when we think about what's going on with marketing, right? So in the context of everything else that's going, Tesla has 140,000 employees. So if they go through with, their 10 and 20% of layoffs, that's going to be somewhere maybe 30,000 people are going to get laid off. So firing 40 marketing people, by the way, having 40 marketing people on a company the size of Tesla is basically tell me you don't care about marketing without telling me you don't care about marketing, is not a big drop in any bucket, but it's a huge turnaround. And when this came out, Elon was very begrudgingly going to do this. He's famous for not really respecting marketing or really knowing much about it or doing anything. And he said, quote, when he set up the team to do advertising, he said, we're going to try a little advertising. I'm putting rock and roll quotes there for those who aren't watching on YouTube. He said, we're going to try a little advertising and see how that goes. Well, it went fine, right? It reminds me very much of the solo stove thing that we did, a couple of weeks ago, where the CEO got thrown under the bus because the brand marketing didn't work 6 weeks into it, right? Yeah. Well, we're advertising, and then he started to post on Twitter that the reason that he fired this marketing team, this advertising team, was because the work was average, right? He said it could have been done by, for any car company. So basically he threw the entire marketing team, the content team, under the bus, and went out of his way to do so. That's the part that bothers me, because when we see a CEO or a board or a leadership team, like the Solo Stove thing or Elon here, when they feel like there's a need to throw marketing under the bus when it's assuredly not their fault. Now, that's something that as marketers we sign up for. As marketers, we sign up for the fact that when things go great, it was something else. It was the CEO's vision. It was the amazing product. It was the salespeople. It was the great customer service. Something else made things really work. Marketing doesn't get a lot of credit. And when things go wildly wrong, marketing gets the blame. We know this. We're marketers. We know that this is the case. We're going to get thrown under the bus. But when you go out of your way, because you have to, you know, the number of people getting laid off here in total is 0.00002% of the entire company layoff, right? That when you go out of your way to say that the work was average and that the reason you did it was because you were right and they were wrong and that they shouldn't have been given the mandate to begin with, well, that's because your insecurity needs you to say the quiet part out loud. And that's just bothersome to me. It's just bothersome to me as a fan of marketing and as a lover of marketing and something that I do for my career. It's marketing and branding have never been anything but an afterthought at Tesla, right? Having 40 people work on your marketing and your content and your PR and your comms is literally, it's laughable in terms of, is that a strategy? Of course, it's not a strategy. It's almost like not even paying any attention to it at all. And so I just think it's ridiculous for someone to go out of their way to throw those people under the bus. And so my message to those people who were laid off in marketing as marketers, bon voyage, let us know if we can help, if we can, you know, do anything to help you. I went and looked. The work was fantastic. The work was good. The work was really good. Given what they were resources that they had, the work was great. Your fellow marketing and communications professionals support you. You'll all end up in a better place, and you're all in a better place now that you don't work for that stupid little man child. So that's my rant, if you will.
Tell me how you feel about Elon. Yeah,
it's really bothersome. It's bothersome when he it's like, you know, fine, if you want to be an idiot, to be an idiot, right? But you know, when you pick on my profession and you pick on my art and my science, nope, you know, the dude does not abide.
I'm hopeful that this, I'm not going to call it toxic masculinity because I think it's worse than that. I think it's just not being a human being. Like you forget all manners and responsibilities that come with man.
It was just unnecessary.
I'm hopeful that we're seeing a turn, that more people are noticing that this is not behavior that we should emulate.
Yeah. That's the other thing, because the last time this happened, when he tore Twitter down to its studs and fired the comms team and the PR team and everybody, Silicon Valley tech bros went, hey, we should do that.
Yeah.
And in many reasons, it's one of the symptoms. I wouldn't say the only symptom, but it's one of the symptoms of why we had that big tech layoff, because a lot of tech company CEOs went, look what Twitter's doing. Let's see if we can tear our company down to the studs and see if anything breaks. I'm so scared that when he does these unnecessary things, CEOs across the go, huh, he got rid of marketing. Well, that's probably a smart thing to do because Elon must be smart. And it's just not. There's nothing to learn here except what not to do.
Well, the other thing is with Tesla's overblown stock price and valuation, as many times as Elon wants to talk about them not being a car company, Tesla is a car company.
They're a car company.
And their valuation is so overblown compared to the other one. Now that you enter the fact that Tesla's not cool anymore. I think that's the biggest thing that happened in the last 3 years. Teslas were like 5 years ago, Teslas were cool. There was no competition. They were the only ones out there. They were doing some incredible things.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore. You could make a case that they're not the best EV car manufacturer anymore.
Yeah.
There's three or four other ones that I've really, and by the way, there's going to be 10 more. And they're sporting a valuation that says that they're the key player in the industry, which they're not anymore. And that's, again, not a financial show.
No.
But I wouldn't be buying Tesla stock.
I wouldn't either.
So there you go. Yeah. Real quick with mine. I wanted to share this.
It's good that we're ending on a positive note.
Funny enough, this is on X. Yeah. We're sharing this. This is from our friend Jay Klaus,
who's amazing.
You'll see him at CEX speaking on a great topic about long-term.
See what you
content.
Did? You did it without even doing it. It's so
I want to read this because it's important. And then we'll go on our merry way. So Jay says, social media is borrowed distribution. Success on social media should benefit systems of distribution you own. Email, podcasting, SMS, private communities. The goal of social media is to decrease your dependency on it, not increase it. That's it. I mean, Jay hits it, and I think a lot of people do not realize that we actually want to use less social media ongoing as we grow our business model as content entrepreneurs than more. And I think we have this feeling like we've got to be doing more on these. No, we don't. We want to be doing less. And it's interesting. I'm seeing this parallel. We're sort of going back to the beginning. And I remember when I first saw Brian Clark's business model, a copy blogger, where he creates the blog, the email newsletter, creating a lot of assets that Brian controls. And then we're like, oh, wow, he's creating his own products and services. He's selling advertising. And we're like, this is an interesting model, like a little mini media company. Then social media comes out. We all go on in with the brand deals on social and are the networks paying me and all that stuff. Those things are fleeting and going away. And I think now we're going back to, we need control over our distribution. If we don't have distribution and we don't have data, we don't have a business model. Yeah. And by the way, this is not just for individuals. This is for brands as well. So we're just seeing the initial signs of this thing happening. The algorithms have won. These are media companies. This is not a social network. We're not talking to our fans or anything like this. They're going to figure out the content that's going to be most addictive, and they don't care about you at all. So that's just right. Be prepared. We're seeing the signs. Do what you have to do right now. If you need to move off to another platform, create your plan Bs. Whatever happens with TikTok, we need to start doing this now.
Yeah. So. My only nuance there would be podcasts are typically rented distribution as well, but that's
you know what? It's funny.
I know where he's going with that.
I've been thinking about the whole podcasting thing because in our subscriber hierarchy that we've talked about forever, podcast is sort of below email, and I would still put it below email. But the difference is that at least right now, if we send out a podcast, it goes to our subscribers.
That's like right.
They will get it. If we send out, if we put this podcast out on TikTok, it may get one view. It may get 12,000.
That's right.
Like, it just depends on how the algorithm is feeling. So we can't trust that. That's the difference where they will.
It's just addressability. Addressability of the audience is that line in your, you know, in your graph and in my graph, right? That addressability is truly the audience. It's technically you're absolutely correct. It's just we're not slave to the algorithm, but we also don't know who the audience is either. So
absolutely right. Yeah. Good. All right, what you got? Well, we'll see you in
100% in prep for CEX. I'm working on my presentation. Your lovely team at CEX is bugging me every day, as they should. I'm absolutely as they should for my deck,
which is coming. You get more leeway than most.
I know. I get a little more leeway because I know a guy. So it's that, and then client work. I have a lovely, wonderful client that I'm working with right now. Doing some fun things. It's a media company, so that's been a blast for me.
That's awesome. I love working with the media companies. There's nothing better, in my opinion. Yeah, same for me. I mean, I'm heads down. Everybody starts getting into town on Friday, so a week from the, when the show comes out, a week from now.
Yeah,
and then I'm buttoning up my opening presentation, and I'll be hosting the event, and excited to see BJ Novak.
It's gonna be great. You got to ask him about the Hollywood restaurant that he owns.
Oh, I'll have to do that. Yes, I will do that. Anne Hanley is doing the.
She's got to ask him about this restaurant that he owns in Hollywood, which has got a waiting list of now like 3 months to get into this restaurant.
What they're doing is
they're bringing back, they have hired a chef to bring back 80s fast food. So you can order like a Pizza Hut pizza. You can order a McRib. You can order, all these foods from your childhood, basically from your 1990s, early 2000s childhood that existed back then.
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't even know about that. I'll send her the note because we're working on questions right now. That's awesome. There you go. Perfect.
All right. Well, that's it. We will see you again next week. It's going to be a fantastic, wonderful week for all of you, I hope. And until we see you again next week, well, just remember, everybody, it's your story to tell. Tell it well. We'll see you next week on This Old Marketing.
Hey, thanks a lot for making it this far in this week's episode. And thank you all for being a part.
part of This Old Marketing. You can check out all the show notes of what we talked about today at thisoldmarketing.com, and it's also where you can leave us a review or a voicemail. We need those reviews and comments on whichever platform you follow us on. And if you haven't followed the podcast, please go do that and make sure you catch the latest and greatest episodes every Friday morning. We're on Apple and Spotify and all your other favorite podcatchers, of course, but we'd love it if you went over and subscribe to us on YouTube. That's right, YouTube. YouTube.com/@thisoldmarketing. We'll see you again next week, folks, with another episode of This Old Marketing.